I get it, but, you know, fuck off.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, can you believe it? It is an episode of Bad Voltage.
Yes, hooray!
After quite some time. Episode 68, thrilled to be here with Stuart Langridge and Jeremy Beyonce Garcia. It's been quite some time since we've all spent time together. It's just so everybody's clear on this, Jeremy and I have been trying to get a show penciled in for a long time, but just Stuart has never been available.
This is a shameless piece of untrue, libelous material.
Yeah, no, Stuart has been, he has always been patient, but Jeremy and I have just, honestly, have just been useless when it comes to scheduling things.
It's been a very busy few months for everybody, yeah, I think.
It's been a bit crazy, but we're here now, and it's interesting, within the first like minute of getting on this, I was like, I really have missed doing this a lot. So it's nice to see you guys.
Yeah, agreed.
We will try harder in 2025. So we're going to keep this really easy today. It's been a long time since we chatted. A lot's happened this year. We just thought we'd maybe just talk about what's happened this year and share some thoughts on it. Should I kick off? Because there's two things that are very consistent in here. And that is social media. Like, we all wrote our things down in our shared doc. Stuart and I both wrote about social media. Like, there's been a lot going on. There's been, you know, obviously, you know, everything that's happened with Twitter or X. Blue Sky seems to be, like, really growing in a lot of popularity.
Yeah.
Mastodon has really flattened out. But, like, just a lot's happened. The landscape's completely shifted, right? What do you guys think is happening here?
I mean, from my perspective, I think there's a combination of things. First of all, Twitter, which I'm not fucking calling X, you bite me. Twitter has increasingly seen people be kind of either, wow, I don't want this in my life anymore, or, wow,
I've got
to have this in my life, but I don't really like it anymore. It feels much more onerous and less like a fun thing.
Do you think part of it, though, and maybe this is just my experience, is, wow, this product's just not very good anymore? Like, it just, doesn't work for a significant percentage of the time for me. And the things that are boosted are clearly people that have paid for blue checks in a way that make all conversations. And I mostly follow it, to be clear, for tech and for sports. Those are the two things. Like, it was a great, if you are watching a live event, it was a great source of information. And I feel like for that use case, it's useless because it's, you get a very weird set of people that it clearly is trying to promote through the algorithm. And a lot of times it just doesn't work.
I think the thing which changed, it feels to me this year, the thing which changed was that it lost the zeitgeist. Right. It was the place where you went for, like, things, news, sports, following stuff, people live tweeting the latest Doctor Who when it was out. You got that combination of I can talk to my mates, but also I can follow, like, Paul Krugman, if I want, talking about just shit that he's thought of while he was on the bog. It was, and to some extent that started changing a few years ago as people curated their experience more. And at the beginning it was kind of, wow, actual celebrities. And then it was the celebrity's social media team tweeting about their latest film project or whatever. But I think the thing that the change to X did was killed that thing where it was the place where everyone went for things by a combination of inserting stuff in there that you didn't want there to be, turning people away because they're like, wow, I really don't like it here anymore. And so that's the thing I think changed for them in 2024 is a culmination of a bunch of different lines on the graph all tipped over the edge, to massively mix metaphors.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is there's a lot of places where, like, we would secretly like to be the next Twitter. But I think, sure, some places there, Blue Sky's trying to do some of it, Threads trying to do some of it, Mastodon was trying to do some of it in 2023 and has largely flatlined in 2024, in my opinion. But I think the thing which I've seen a lot of people do is kind of get a bit soured on the whole concept. It's like everyone's sort of opened their eyes and gone, wow, we've spent 15 years just typing our lives into this thing. Do we need to do that?
It's interesting you say that, because I've noticed something similar, which is, you know, so when Elon originally took over X, I would probably, I'm sure you guys will probably agree with this, but I think of the three of us, I was the one who was probably the least critical of what might happen with X.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Jeremy and I, we saw each other recently in person, and we were talking about how we've had quite different experiences when it comes to the stability of X. Like, yes. Jeremy's had a ton of problems. I've not had a ton of problems with X, which is interesting in itself. Like, it suggests that it's pretty variable depending on what your experience is. But the one thing that is undeniable to me is that I was really excited when Elon took over, because I thought there's no doubt in my mind that there was some level of choosiness when it came to speech on X, and I was excited by the idea of broadening the tent up a little bit, but it's just so full of shit. And every single time I go on X, the first tweet is Elon Musk's tweet. Now, I'm not a big conspiracy theory kind of person, but it seems a hell of a coincidence that literally every single time I go on X, the first tweet is Elon's.
Dude, that's not a conspiracy theory. The guy runs it and said to them, I would like my tweets to be boosted to the top of everyone's timeline.
I don't think we know that that's the case.
The conspiracy theory is that it's coincidence, that all the dice in the world hate you and everyone else.
But to me, it's what's happened is it's just become... I see two types of things on there. I see just political stuff that I'm just not interested in. I'm so sick of politics. And then secondly, it's full of these, like, you know, the 12 most shocking plane crashes of all time. Don't read if you have a soft heart. It's all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it's garbage. Yeah. But I don't know where everybody's gone, because I went to Blue Sky because everybody was talking about, oh, Blue Sky seems to be blown up. It doesn't seem that much different. I think you're right, Ak. I think people have basically just gotten soured on the concept of social media as a whole.
I think that's the point, that people have gone, well, I want to go somewhere else. There isn't really a must. Maybe do I need to go anywhere? Maybe I just don't do this. And I think the people who were looking at social media 10 years ago still are now, but it's not every 30 seconds, and it's not, I've got notifications turned on, so I find out whenever anybody mentions anything, and it's not, I'm going to build my own lists and curate them, and I'm going to find out what's going on, and I'm going to tap into it. It's more sort of, it's almost a duty, like a chore, a thing you look at. It's like, oh, I haven't checked my Twitter today, or I haven't checked my Blue Sky today. Not everybody's like that. Some people are still well into it. But I think everyone who's well into it is trying to recapture how it felt in 2012, when it was cool, and now it isn't.
Do you think that's but do you think that's our age group? Like, we're all in our mid-40s, and I wonder what that's just because we are getting soured on it.
That depends on what you think social media is. I am modeling social media here as things which look approximately like Twitter, so specifically not TikTok. So
yeah, I agree. Like Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter.
So it's entirely possible that Generation Alpha, or whatever we're meant to call them, just never got on board in the first place. And so when we start to die away, there is no youth team getting promoted up into the first team. I don't know about you. Want to talk to someone who actually looks at the stats a bit more. But yes, some of it may be us stepping away, but it doesn't to me seem like the social media platforms have been recolonized by people who are 19. I'd think they maybe never really on it to begin with.
It's very rare that a thing stops having the utility that it had, and another thing just steps in, right? We move on to the next type of thing. And Twitter was like a moment in time and quite a phenomenon that would be very difficult to replicate. So I'm personally a little bit dubious that any Twitter clone will ever become what Twitter had the potential to do. I think for actually one curious thing for you, Jono, because we did have this conversation and Twitter doesn't work all the time for me. Do you pay?
I do.
I don't. So I wonder if they put you to a different tenant or something if you pay versus if you don't, and that their failure mode is that non-payers break first.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about not paying. I'm thinking about, because I don't feel like I'm getting much value out of it. So I'm thinking about actually stopping paying. Be curious to see what my experience
if you experience the grades after you stop.
And that, without wishing to necessarily be unfair and indulging the conspiracy theory thing, that sounds quite a lot like the sort of decision that the current management would make, right?
But I mean, it's a rational decision. Let's make sure the experience that people paying have is better than people that aren't paying. Like, that's a rational business decision to me.
You're not meant to do it by actually making it fail for you, though. You meant to make it better for him, not worse for you.
But I don't think we're saying that they deliberately make it worse for people. Yeah.
They clearly cut resources. Right, exactly. It's just that if you're going to hit a capacity issue, better to have that capacity issue impact someone who's not paying than someone that is.
I can't see how that – well – I would say I can't see how they're hitting capacity issues because it's not as popular as it was. But
he's unplugging data centers. What do you mean?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's the point. If it's a tenth as pop, you know, if it's 10% of what it was, but they've got 1% of the data centers they had before, then sure. Okay.
I will say, though, I don't know about the two of you. I genuinely miss the utility that old Twitter brought because it was a great live event experience. And it was just a great live event aside and sporting events aside. It was a unuseful. I found value in the connections that it brought. And I like it seems very clear to me that Threads actively does not want to replace.
Correct.
And then, like, they're philosophically opposed to being either where you go for news or where you go for live events, which I'm not sure what that makes them.
Yeah.
And I think Blue Sky just doesn't have the density.
So Threads, in my very, very limited experience, I mean, I think I technically have an account because everyone got hammered into having one, but I've never really looked at it.
That's true.
Because I'm just not interested. And from talking to other people, it seems like what they care about is like brands.
Yes.
Which is the thing that I utterly did not care about on Twitter, even when Twitter was good. So not at all bothered about that. Blue Sky is interesting because, it's rocketed up recently. They've got 25 million users now, and 3 months ago they had like 2 million. I was the 33,000th user or something. So I was, you know, I've got a little thing which says Blue Sky Elder, for fuck's sake. And you've got all people sitting around going, oh, I remember the days of Alf and the Hell Thread. And I'm like, just fuck off, God. But I don't think it has the juice. Because I'm not sure anywhere has the juice. Because like I said, I don't think people are going, I definitely want somewhere else. I think if Twitter had just, like, been captured by aliens in 2014, so at the height of it being popular, it just vanished, and people would have gone, okay, cool, let's switch to somewhere else. And then that would have immediately been a Twitter replacement, I think. But I think the last 8-9 years have seen its utility and how fun it is gradually decline, right? I mean, I think Musk made it worse, but it was already trending in that direction a bit anyway, as the bloom's gone off the rose for the whole of social media stuff, I think. And so now when it goes away, you've not got people saying, I must immediately find a Twitter replacement, because the Twitter in their heads that they need to replace is not the one in 2012. It's the one in 2022, which is not good. But
I think what makes this topic really hard to discuss is that it's difficult to kind of pin down what's going on, right? Because we've said this in the past a number of times, that your social media experience is really dependent a lot on who you're connected to and who you're following and all the rest of it, right? So if you're following people who are, for the classic example is politics. If you're following a lot of very shouty people who can't stop espousing their opinions about politics, something can become really annoying pretty quickly. But then if you the other example of that is my mum, right? She follows like a lot of people who post pictures of animals and stuff like that. So her experience of social media is very positive. Like she doesn't see a lot of the political bickering and shouting and all the rest of it because she doesn't follow those people. But what's interesting to me with Twitter specifically is I think overall more speech is good. And I think it's good that Elon brought that to it. But I don't know whether the reason why X is not as useful now is because the kind of people who've been drawn to it are shouty free speech people who can't shut up. It's like, I'm happy with you having free speech. I'd like less of your speech overall. I can't tell whether it's because the platform itself has become less useful or because the crowd that's gathered around it are kind of like, we're all open source people, are kind of like the annoying, puritanical free software crowd, you know, who kind of will lecture you left, right, and center about everything.
I think that's exactly the point. That, sure, if you build a thing and you make it open source and you go, you know, this is an open source thing that we're building. Great. It's just like a factor of sort of what you do. If you make that your point, the thing, the flag you're going to carry, that this is open source in every possible way, open source is the most important thing about us, then the sorts of people you will attract are people for whom that is the first and only priority. And to a first approximation, they're all bellends and they'll spend their whole time going on at one another about how you're using the wrong license rather than just getting on with it, right? Yeah. So that's the point. If you decide to elevate one thing above the other, you will attract people who are obsessive about that one thing. And in general, people who are obsessive about free speech tend to lean in, you know, I mean, for every one Pope hat, right? Everyone Ken White who's out there being a First Amendment defense lawyer. There are 999 people like, I want to be able to say the N word and people complain at me about it. Where's my free speech? Right? So, and that's the kind of, as far as I can tell, that is, Musk is not a stupid man. He is well aware that he's incentivizing that kind of behavior and has chosen not to stop doing that. So that's what he wants. I mean, and it's now what he's got.
I mean, obviously we don't want to get into a conversation about free speech. It's boring, but I'm not sure I would agree that that's the breakdown of it. I think you do get a small number of people who just want to be, frankly, rude, disrespectful, just offensive assholes who will be attracted to that. To me, the problem is not so much the people who want to use the N word. To me, I think the problem is it is a bit more, to use the comparison of like the puritanical freedom fighters in the free software movement. It's people who are never going to really use the N word, but it's, to your point, it's people who can only look at life through, here are a set of principles that have to be obeyed. And the way in which they engage is it's only ever about that. Like, so for example, to me, there are many elements of the free speech conversation that are super interesting. Like, I'm bit really into stand-up comedy. And I love the idea of stand-up comedians being able to make jokes on X in a way that doesn't get them canceled, doesn't get them banned. Not like overtly offensive jokes, just that people can, they have complete freedom of what they want to talk about. But that isn't the conversation that's on X. It is only like political bickering and shouting. And I think it's just become so tiresome.
Yeah. Because the single issue nutters drive everyone else out.
Yeah. And so what's great is that Musk has created genuinely the only platform where you can say whatever you want. But the problem is that they've not curated it in a capacity that actually has interesting conversations now, right? I want interesting conversations on there that are where people can say whatever they want. Whereas from what I can tell, it only seems to be, heavily right-leaning, and I don't care whether it's left or right, but it's just the trend that I'm seeing is generally right-leaning, free software, puritanical discussions. And if they focus more on attracting other people, it would be way better. So,
I mean, I agree, we don't really want to talk about the free speech thing. So I have another social media-y point, which I think is interesting, which is that as far as I can tell, in the last 15 years of doing things on Twitter, everyone's forgotten how to do marketing. Like, because what you did to get attention on whatever it was you were doing was you posted on Twitter about it, and now you can't do that anymore. No one knows what to do.
What do you mean? I don't quite understand what you mean.
I think a million go-to-market people just guessed that your assessment of their skill level.
Yeah.
Sure, but, you know, I'm not wrong.
I think good go-to-market existed before and after and is not really impacted by social media.
I agree.
So to be clear, I don't think I'm talking about big companies who have like people whose job is to do marketing for their products, and they've always had a very big, diverse array of ways they do that, and social media was one of them. It's a thing where if you are some kind of relatively small-time creator of something, you could get the word out to a community, a potential group of users, of customers, of purchasers, by just using social media. And now, largely, you can't do that. And I don't think people know how to go back to it. So, John, I'll give you an example.
But I think what you just said distills down to good marketing is difficult, like many vocations are, and that has never changed. That there was a couple weird years where you could be a quote-unquote influencer with basically no skills, I think was more of an aberration than anything. And marketing has always been important and difficult and will continue to be.
Okay, that's a useful recontextualization. I was thinking of it as, hey, we finally had a way of doing marketing without having to be really good at marketing. But your point is not we've lost that. It's that we temporarily gained it but didn't really deserve to anyway, which is a fair way of looking at it, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, no, fair enough then. I'll buy that. In that case, it's sad because those of us who are not great at getting the word out suddenly had a way of doing so and you've bloody taken it away again.
You know, it's interesting, by the way, speaking of this, and then we should probably move on to something other than social media, but I've noticed, weirdly, I don't know if you two have seen this, that with our customers, we're getting consistent feedback that LinkedIn, in the last 6 months, has become a lot more useful and a lot more effective. And I've weirdly found that LinkedIn, myself, I'm paying more attention to LinkedIn than any of these other social media networks. Now, I don't know whether that's, again, somewhat self-selecting, right? Like LinkedIn is obviously focused towards businessy people. So people are not generally posting about their family and posting about their hobbies. You're not going to LinkedIn for sports.
Yep.
But I've noticed that it has gotten better. It used to be filled with like bullshitty, salesy thought leadership nonsense. And I've noticed it getting a bit more useful, a bit more personal recently. I wonder whether we're seeing businessy people who would go to X and Twitter now taking some of that stuff to LinkedIn.
A long time ago, when I was at Canonical, no less, they did the user design team at Canonical did a sort of a survey about social media-y things, and they came up with a number of personas of the types of people who use computers and use social media. And one type was a mirror. They're people who like to reflect what's happening around them by talking about themselves. One type was a door. I forget the names, but it was someone who likes the experience of talking about what they're doing and likes having a place to do that. And for a while it was Twitter, but if it's not Twitter anymore, if you are someone who likes to do that, you've got to do it somewhere because that's what you want to do. Right. In 2004, you were writing a blog, right? In 2010, you were posting on Twitter or maybe in 2008, you were posting it on Facebook. And in 2012, you were posting it on Twitter or whatever. Right. And now, if you've still got that urge, where are you going to do it? And maybe if what you want to talk about is sort of vaguely connected to your business, especially if you're like also using it as a small amount of marketing, maybe you go to LinkedIn for it. I can't abide looking at LinkedIn. It's all such corporate buzzword bollocks the whole time.
Yeah, I do think some of the thoughtful discourse in tech specifically has moved to LinkedIn. Completely agree.
I think that's fair, yeah. And I suppose you know, by the law of averages or whatever, if more stuff moves to LinkedIn, there's more good stuff on LinkedIn, even if it's only 15% of the total.
But the other thing as well is, and this is might sound a bit odd, but when I think of LinkedIn, Stuart, I don't think of you as being the audience for LinkedIn.
No.
Because I think of LinkedIn as being... it's weird. I don't know why I think that, because maybe it's just because I just don't think you're interested in it, but because you run a company, like you run your own business and you've run your own business for many years, right? So arguably it should be a place that you will be interested in, but
sure.
Like it just, I think I've never thought of you as being particularly interested in businessy related shit. You're more interested in technology and
I don't think I'm interested in business thought leadership.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's probably the right way. That's a better way of describing it. But yeah. By the way, I did notice that in our notes here for the 2024 recap, speaking of blogging, no one wrote the word Mullenweg.
Now. I thought about that, but it seems very recent rather than a 24. I did think about having a thing about BDFLs in general and how maybe also the bloom has gone off that particular rose, but I didn't put it in. I thought about it.
That is an interesting topic that perhaps if we do another show before 2027, we should talk about.
we should definitely talk about what's going on. I mean,
I think we all have opinions.
Yes, I was going to write it, and then I was distracted by seeing the sun out of my window and thinking it was a drone come to attack me. So
it's a drone or it's an unidentified flying object.
I have only picked this up. This is nothing to do with the show. I'm just interested. I've only picked this up by people taking the mick out of it. But there seem to be loads of people who are like talking about there being drones all over everywhere. And then it turns out that the drones are actually the stars or a weather balloon or something. So first of all, are there really drones? Are there really drones? And secondly, why is everyone freaking out about it? And then thirdly, why is everyone freaking out about seeing the planet Mars and thinking it's spying on them?
We're on a fascinating timeline, I think is the answer. There was a news, I was watching the news this morning, and someone said something. There's a whole drone thing going on in New Jersey right now. So if you live in New York, you hear about unidentified drones every day. And they were talking about there's a possibility that there might be a person flying in a drone, and the other person just looked over and said, yeah, that's called a helicopter. And the deadpan way in which he said it was so good that...
Are there actually drones that need explaining, or is it all just people seeing the stars?
Oh, yeah. No, there are drones popping up around the coast. I mean, it seems like the last week or so, this has become like a thing.
Yeah, this is a very up-to-date news thing rather than the whole of 2024. But
it seems like, it does seem like there's an increase in like unidentified vehicles in our airspace, which is somewhat concerning. Because these UAPs and all the rest of it, the military's identified, like, yes, there are vehicles and we don't know where.
What the hell is a UAP?
It's what they're now calling unidentified aerial phenomena. It's basically
they're just literally not calling it UFO because they sound like crackpots, but that's what they mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's there's military pilots who've testified in front of Congress. The video that's been put out there by the Department of Defense showing these things. And they've said these things are operating at a level that we don't have the technology for.
Like John O'Bacon, UFOlogist.
This is not like X-Files shit. Yeah.
Who's we don't have? I mean, if I can buy a pretty sophisticated DJI drone for $500, I imagine what nation states have access to is quite unbelievable.
You would think NSA would have something, you know, at least the next revolution on. Right?
Yes, what I can buy next year.
Yeah, I mean, and I've not been paying close attention to this, but there was like some pilots that were like testified and they said these vehicles, this is outside, this is not the drone thing, these UAP things. the way in which they've maneuvered in the air.
Oh my God. People have been saying that, but qualified test pilots have been commenting to Congress about this since like 1950.
No. Go and look into it. This is not just, you know, UFO was always nutters.
He's going to start, I know, but it was always nutters, but now it's different, you see, right? Is it the fucking Trilateral Commission doing it? You're nuts. Stop it.
So we should talk about chemtrails.
Oh, man.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
I did not have UFOs on my list. I just wanted to ask about it.
This went a whole direction I was not anticipating.
Yeah.
Right.
What else has been going on?
It's next year, 2024. So, should I do one? One of the things I thought was interesting is that this year, the UK went over 50% renewable electricity. It's not like it happened this year and there was nothing last year. This has been a slow trend up for years and years and years. But it actually tipped over 50%. And that feels like sort of a milestone, a flagpole to have reached that. There's now more of it than not. And I thought that was cool. There have been a whole bunch of days where, because the National Grid have I believe they have a Twitter account, but they have a Mastodon account as well. So every now and again, I'll see a thing from it and it will say something like, today we use no fossil fuels at all to generate power for the National Grid. And I thought, that's cool. But again, they've been saying that infrequently for years. And it tends to happen more on like days when there's lots of wind or whatever, obviously. But I thought to myself, hang on, this is happening. This feels to me like it's happening more often. Maybe I'm just becoming more aware of it, but it feels like it's happening more often. And that bump, when I looked it up, that bump that we've now gone over 50%, there's still a long way to go and blah, blah, blah. But it feels like a real thing to me. And I don't know, Jeremy, you're looking skeptical. And maybe it isn't actually a big deal at all and who actually cares, but it felt like a good thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing, but it seems like an inexorable thing that's been a slow march. Like it turns out if you have something that's very limited and increasingly difficult to get to over time, like the easy fossil fuel energy sources we have gotten long ago. And each next reserve that we tap into will be either of lower quality or more difficult to get to, or likely both, which makes it more expensive, which makes it less efficient, which means every time that happens, renewables just make more financial sense. So I think the tipping point to me is that renewables now are at a point where they're competitive, because the cost of something like a solar photovoltaic cell goes down over time. The cost of extracting things like oil and coal go up over time because you've already gotten to the easy to get to ones. So like there's an inflection point where it has nothing to do with we want to save Earth, because clearly we don't really care as humanity about that. It's just economically easier and cheaper to do the renewable thing. And I think that's the difference now, is it crossed that threshold.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, right? It's not like anyone did anything specific to make it happen this year. This is, someone could have sat there, and someone did, in fact, in 1970, predict that this would happen at some point, that those two graph lines would cross.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're right, the fact that it happened to happen this year is, it is coincident, right? It's contingent, fortuitous. But nonetheless, it did happen. And that seems like a thing where we can go, cool, even if this is just the inexorable progress of time.
I'll take it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? I am less convinced by the inevitability of better things happening than I used to be. I'll take this win, given that it's there.
But did you know that the wind farms are turning the frogs gay?
I did not, but it wouldn't surprise me if you've got people out there shouting.
I was going to say, here's the tough thing about 2024. Did Jono make this random statement up as a troll? And is there a whole giant group of people that think this?
Oh, yeah.
Indiscernible. Completely indiscernible.
Yes. I know. It is worrying.
I do not think it is possible to make up something more ridiculous than what's already being pushed. Like, how, if you make up something as a joke, as an exaggerated point, to say, look how bad it could get for the purposes of comedy, people will be like, oh, no, some dude thought that 2 years ago. It's worse now. Now they've got adrenochrome involved, right?
There is a article on the Duke University Press called Theorizing the Gay Frog, right? This is the abstract from the article. The gay frog has taken on a surprisingly prominent role in contemporary environmental culture, primarily associated with American shock jock Alex Jones and the so-called alt-right. Fears of frogs being turned gay by hormones in water have nevertheless entered the mainstream, while gay frog memes are shared online by users across the political spectrum.
Okay, I mean, he's not a shock jock, right? He used to be a shock jock, and now he's unemployed.
Now it's just a jock. By the way, didn't the Onion apparently were acquired InfoWars, and then they got turned down or something?
Yeah,
they did. Oh, that would have been so great.
They're doing the auction again, but
yeah, they are. The judge had a bit of a point, don't get me wrong, but also literally no sense of humor, and it was very disappointing. What you're supposed to do is go, okay, right, technically I've got my problems with the law here, but this is so full of lols that I'm just going to allow it to happen anyway. And it didn't. Just disappointing.
Lol escapes. Yeah.
It was all aboard the lol coaster for that one. I mean, it might still happen, but I don't think it's going to now because.
Oh, no, I still think it's the most likely outcome.
Because I think the other side have just straight up got more money. So, Jono, the reason it got binned is the Onion bid X amount, but the reason that amount was sufficient was because the Sandy Hook parents basically went, we'll take less money in order that the Onion's bid is sufficient to buy it. Because we would like to see the Onion win this rather than more people who are just going to carry on doing what InfoWars was doing.
And the other
before.
Bidder, to be clear, was going to give it back to Alex Jones to just continue InfoWars as is.
Yes. And unfortunately, I think those people have got more money than the Onion, which means if it comes down to a straight who's got more money, the answer tends to be arseholes, unfortunately. So, and so if the judge goes that process of, you know, the people wronged by all of this want the Onion to have it. If that's insufficient, then it's probably going to be who's got the bigger wallet, which is probably not the Onion, is my guess. But we'll find out in 2025.
We will. Again, crazy world that we live in.
It is. We should have just said things that were notable in 2024. Everything went mad. Madder, I think I'll say.
You know, one thing that Jeremy wrote down here as well was Apple Vision Pro. And I wrote... AR is kind of taken over VR. So we should talk about this.
Yeah.
What's your take on this, Jeremy?
So I was just curious. I know you had some predictions around Apple Vision Pro. You have been, I would say, of the three of us, the least skeptical of some of these things. It looks like, you know, if you're looking at sales, Counterpoint Research said that Apple sold around 370,000 headsets, which was, let's go with, less than what people were anticipating. The rumor is they've suspended work on a second generation.
I'll tell you what, though. I'd have to go back and check, but just very briefly to interrupt. I think that's about on the nose for what Jono predicted 12 months ago.
Oh, well, there you go.
I think he said 300,000. We'd have to go back and check, and we need to do a predictions review thing at some point in the new year.
We do.
But it sounds like they might have suspended work on the second generation of it, at least for
that's
a year or potentially longer. But then you wrote that AR is overtaking VR. So curious, do you think that that's just... That was the initial way that it manifested itself and it's going away, or?
Yeah, I mean, I've been vaguely paying attention to this. It's undeniable that the Vision Pro, to your point, Jeremy, has just not performed as Apple would have wanted it. I mean, it was always intended to be like primarily for developers. It was not intended, and Apple have done this before with the first generation, like the same thing happened with the watch, but it's clearly not catching on. And while it was widely praised for its capabilities, it was also widely panned for the weight and the heat of the headset. So I've noticed that there's been a bit of a surge of the AR glasses, right? So obviously, Meta came out with they showcased the, I forget the name of them, those new glasses with the waveform displays in them.
About a month ago?
Yeah.
I forgot the name, but I looked at it earlier in the week, just thinking
Google
about the
show. Samsung have got something that they were sharing last week or a couple of weeks ago, and there's a whole bunch of other companies in this. And it seems to me, at least, that we're in this like early stages of like genuinely useful AR glasses. Like the Meta ones, I thought were pretty cool, right? I mean, they've got like a separate compute puck, which they're gonna. But the technology is getting better and better and better. But the fact that you could wear these things, you can see a bit of flickering on the display. But I think the Vision Pro has taught the world that the having your perception cut off, like having something on your head and the weight. Consumers are just not into it. Like they're just not going to do it. Right. So it seems to me like that's the reason why I think AR is overtaking VR, is that the technology is getting good enough now where we're not far off having a pair of glasses that don't look weird. Right. Where it's actually like the Meta thing I thought was the fact that, you know, the waveguide lens thing, you know, actually shines the light onto the lens itself as opposed to having like a separate little display in the corner. I think is interesting. So
isn't the separate compute puck in the end just going to be your phone? And the reality here is
right.
Your information has been at your fingertips now long enough that you're like, wow, having to reach into my pocket to access all of the knowledge of the history of humanity is too much. I want to just see it right in front of me. So it's like really right. Just an extension of the phone in the end. It's just the next interface will not be your phone. It will be vision.
Yeah, it's interesting you say it because I had the same thought. Like Apple have basically got the compute puck.
Yes,
Google do.
Yeah,
well, Samsung do.
That's
it's a
the
phone.
Point. Facebook haven't. I mean, they would like to build a world in which the thing you carry around is not something they bought from one of your competitors. Right. If Facebook can sell you some glasses and a compute puck, maybe you'll stop carrying your phone for everything and carry the compute puck instead. But they're not going to be, they've tried to make phones in the past, didn't work. Right. And they're not going to get the access to all of the information in the phone that they want from a Facebook app, which you install on the phone. I don't know. I mean, I doubt that's their major play, but it's a bit of a play.
But it's pretty clear we're only a few years away from a phone no longer being a phone. Like the next generation of people will not have known what phone numbers are. It's pretty clear.
That's unfortunate because I have sworn that every time someone says, I want my phone to not make phone calls, I have vowed to shoot them and now I have to shoot you. So that's very sad.
I mean, it's just the reality of how people who aren't you, the non-Luddites, that's how they use their phone now.
I get it. But, you know, fuck off.
That's the bit before the music.
It is, actually. I agree with you. Maybe we will reach that point in the next generation. It's certainly coming at some point. And I don't think Facebook's major play is eliminate phones. But if they put themselves in a position where if it takes off, it does, I don't think they'd be sad about it.
I think we're ignoring, to me, what is one of the more interesting questions here is, does this make Apple and Google more likely to be successful in the next generation or less? Like, will Apple hold on to that phone interface so long that they get surpassed by somebody else? Being the leader two generations of technology is almost impossible, as we see by Microsoft missing mobile completely was because they viewed the world through desktop computing. They could not comprehend that it wouldn't just be shrunken down mobile versions of desktop. It would be a different paradigm. Will Apple hold on too much or will they let go? I don't know.
So I agree with the point you're making, but I think the reasons are flipped 180 degrees. The way you defeat an incumbent is by inventing a brand new platform. So it's not, it kind of is, sure, Microsoft was stuck on desktop stuff, so people kept trying to invent, but people kept trying to invent new things, right? It's not just about having a new platform, because people, you know, there was the iPac. long before there was iPhones, right? You've had people trying to invent VR headsets for the last 100 years and no one cares. So sure, the big shift is going to be when you invent a new platform, which is
It's not a new platform. Apple revolutionized. It wasn't Nokia or one of the phone manufacturers that revolutionized phones. It was the number two player in desktop computing.
No, that's fair. But yeah, so the next thing is not going to be an evolution of a phone. It's going to be something completely different. But that's why people made a big play for things like voice control on stuff, which didn't work out. I mean, it depends on your point of view. It sort of works out. If you're the guy who runs the Amazon Echo project, whose name I'm not going to speak because it's there and it will wake up, you'd go, do you know what? You're sort of going, oh, well, that's not very successful because it's only in 50% of all homes globally or whatever. Right? They did fantastically, but it hasn't become like the thing that people use.
Well, and to me, the thing that Apple are especially good at is they're especially good at, I think, really dialing in what consumers actually want and then delivering something that is devilishly easy to use, right? So when you talk to people about the iPhone and what they love about the iPhone, people say things like FaceTime and iMessage and AirDrop, right? These are, in themselves, not very sexy things.
Apple's good at this, or Steve Jobs was good at this?
I would like to submit that Apple were very good at it 10 years ago. Yes, absolutely. I would.
But I don't think it was ever Apple.
Well, but I would say that Apple is still good at it.
I don't know they're still good at it. Name the last revolutionary thing that Apple did.
I would say the way in which you the way in which you use the Vision Pro is revolutionary.
It has not revolutioned. We've literally said that ourselves. If it was revolutionary, everyone would have bought one to get it.
No, but sometimes things take a while. I mean, look, you know the whole adoption curve? They're in the early stages of the adoption curve. The reason why it's not taken off significantly is because it's $3,500 for a fucking helmet that you put on. Right?
But what's the revolutionary part, I guess, is what I'm missing.
What I'm saying is that I think one of the things that Apple... We've seen this time and time again with Apple, right? Is somebody, they're never first. Apple always bring out the thing way later than anybody else. They weren't the first with the smartwatch. They weren't the first with a phone. They weren't the first with a computer. They weren't the first with a VR headset. But what they bring out is always pretty, I'd say they're very, very good at interfacing technology with consumers. I think they can get, like, I'm a good example of this. Like, I tried countless smartwatches and never stuck with them. And then I bought my first Apple Watch and I use it every day. And it's not because I'm an Apple fanboy. I like Apple stuff, but it has to be useful, right? So I'd say that what will happen here, my theory is...
Apple sold 1 million iPhones in 74 days. When they created it, and it was $500, and that was 17 years ago.
Yeah.
The knock on it is that it was comically expensive back then.
It's not as expensive as $3,500, but it's not like a million miles away from it. It was well expensive.
But also the concept of the phone was well understood by the market. It was a way better phone.
If VR headsets as a concept are not well understood by the market, they've been around since I was 12. How are they not well understood?
I don't think you can compare phones and VR headsets in these cases, right? Back when the iPhone came out, right, it was revolutionary in how it operated, but it was not. It was the equivalent of like the difference between like it's kind of like Tesla, right? Tesla somewhat revolutionized the concept of an electric car, not just because it was electric and the range, but also they kind of rethought what a car was. We've talked about this previously. It's like they're not really a car company, right? They're a tech company that happens to make cars, right? So to me, the iPhone was a leap ahead, but it was still a very familiar item. Whereas a VR has always been a niche thing for nutters, right? It's never been in the a broad consumer product. Phones have.
But smartphones were a niche product because they existed before, but no one had them. People had dumb phones.
No. We all back then when the iPhone came out, we had phones with full color displays. They weren't like the touch screen like the iPhone was. They didn't have the App Store, but the first version of the iPhone didn't have the App Store either. But BlackBerry was the thing. People were sending emails on BlackBerries. People were sending, I had a Nokia phone with a full color screen and games on it.
Sure. But my point is, people like us, sure, I had my Nokia E50 and I could like write programs for Symbian on it, but I was not normal.
Right, but what I'm saying is that like the leap wasn't as big. My main point coming back to the AR glasses thing is I have a suspicion that what's going to happen is that the Vision Pro will eventually die out, but all of the R&D that they did into thinking about spatial and how you interface with it, and I think that will go into their AR glasses. They originally, what was it? Last year, I think it was. It was announced from Mark Gurman, you know, the guy who always leaks stuff with Apple, that they'd shut down their AR glasses project, that they were no longer working on it. Around the time that they stopped doing the Apple car as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if now they're going to restart that project. I think Meta will have put a light under the, a fire under the arse of a number of companies, given what they showed off with their, I forget the name of it, those glasses that they announced. But I'm fairly convinced that AR is going to be the next thing, because fundamentally it doesn't cut your perception off. I think it's weird having a VR headset on.
I certainly agree that AR is going to be better than VR, but that's because VR is fundamentally rubbish, and its fundamental rubbish value proposition has not changed. Right? You've got to have a massive headset on, completely replace everything you can see, which means that either you, in theory, move around in this virtual world, or you're basically in a spacesuit which you pilot with a joystick or whatever. It does not map well onto the way things actually are. And people keep trying to tell us that it does actually, and you're wrong to think that, and we're not wrong, and it's bollocks.
Well, that's what's interesting to me about the Vision Pro was, you know, lots of companies, people will over-tech things, right? They'll be like, oh, this technology is really cool. Be like, yeah, but it doesn't actually... This doesn't fit into everybody's lives. Apple have usually been very good at that. So the Vision Pro is quite different for them. But the big question in my mind, and this is a longer conversation that we should have in another show, is if you look at, for example, the Meta Ray-Ban things, you have to press a button. You have to enable the functionality. Whereas if you look at the new Samsung Google crossover, it's always on. And I'm curious to see whether AR is going to be always on, and then you have to deliberately tell it to shut up and not and to not pay attention, or whether the idea will be that you have to turn it on, right? You have to enable, like our phones, you have to
take it out,
enable it to do something, but notifications are always running. So it's going to be fascinating to see what the UX for this looks like.
The continuous partial attention thing is turned up to 11 if my glasses are constantly projecting. I mean, the visions you always get of people, you know, speculating about what AR is going to be like is you're walking down the street and a little pop-up box appears pointing at a shop next to you telling you there's a discount, or the person next to you saying this is their name and this is where you met them or whatever, right? But whether that's that whole idea of it's always on, always looking at what you're doing and augmenting reality with information, or whether it's just for people who can't be asked to take their phones out of their pocket and want to just go, and have it appear.
It's going to be interesting.
What I think is most interesting about that is the idea of you have a thing you can look at, and it augments you or gives you access to the information that's on your phone in your eyes without you moving, was cracked a decade ago by Google Glass. But they screwed the pooch so epically on the marketing of the release that everyone was like, if someone invents the term glass holes for your customers, you have not done well, right?
Yeah.
And I think it'll be interesting to see whether AR this time around can avoid that perception that the sort of people who buy this are wankers who have too much money and therefore you should avoid them and shun them. Partnering with Ray-Ban helps with this, I must admit, so you don't look like data off the Star Trek.
That was a fucking genius move. And from what I can tell, they've sold a shitload of them as well.
I was very surprised that it wasn't Oakley, but yes, it was a good move. Yeah,
we can't have everything. All right, fellas, I've got to go.
It turns out when you don't do a show for this long, we didn't get nearly a third doc that we're
had. Supposed to
we
have like three things
Intel, we didn't talk about it. AI.
Yeah.
It turns out we have more to say in a future show. It's going to be great.
We do.
So our 2024 recap is going to be like 8 shows.
We need to do predictions reviews and set new predictions as well.
So. We do. So we'll see you in, I don't know, September or something. No, it's... I would like to say thank you the end of the year. Thank you very much to Marius, who is going to be editing this. We haven't made him work very hard for the last couple of months. But Marius from nerdzine.media is still the coolest guy. And he sends me messages going, have you recorded a show? And I'm like, no, we haven't. Don't worry about it. But this time I'll be able to say we have. Hooray.
Yay.
So have a very good Christmas, everybody listening. Have a lovely, if you celebrate, have a lovely new year. We'll be back, we promise, in 2025.
We will. We'll be back in January 2025.
Okay,
we're going to get really, particularly promisy.
Jono specifically committed to this, but on the other hand, you know our record on predictions. So,
good point. Well played, argued sir. On that podcast.
All right.
Have a good
thanks
one,
everyone.
Peeps.
I just realized we didn't figure out who's going to introduce this show.
You have volunteered yourself. Well played.
All right. Oh, shit. What episode number is this?
68.
All right. Brilliant.
So the top of the notes. I do try and prep this stuff.